This is the Michael K. Show.
Took a couple of days off, and from what I hear, a lot of people would rather have not had me come back today. That wow. You two were so good together that I guess I slow you both down. And if you tell me to step away, I'll step away for the next 2 days, take a nice long vacation. Oh. But the reviews are just outstanding. I'm just saying, since you did so well, let me step back a little.
And now you realize we don't need you anymore.
No, you don't need me, so I can go whenever I feel it's time to go.
Let's take this under advisement. We'll make some considerations.
This is the Michael K. Show.
I'm sorry if I'm ruining everybody's party by being back, but I am.
You are.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Unusual first hour, a lot of tension. Some of it caused by me, but, you know, that's just the way it is. Coming off 2 days of just relaxation and then finding out that you're not needed. Trey Wingo never has to go through this because everybody he works with adores him and realizes his value and his worth. We do every Wednesday at this time. Trey Wingo, you can hear him every Monday through Friday right here on 98.7 ESPN from 6 to 10 in the morning. And Trey Davis Wingo joins us now. Trey, how are you?
Oh, listen, the rejoin before I come on with you guys is always my favorite thing. So you took a couple of days off, and apparently the ratings were through the roof, and now you're feeling what, neglected? Is that what it is?
Not ratings through the roof. We always have like a FaceTime call before the show, and our PD was right on and was gushing about how great Don was without me.
You know what? Sometimes Don just needs to grow, like a flower that needs water.
Oh, he needs water, okay.
That's a great point. But isn't it sad, though? And doesn't it remind you sort of what was the Jordan doc called again?
The Last Dance.
Right. Sorry, The Undertaker was the last ride. Okay. Doesn't it remind you of Jordan in The Last Dance, though, Trey, where it's like if he misses three games and Pippen plays well without him, it's like he comes back, he's not even happy. He needs more. That's what Michael is. Michael K. and Michael Jordan, one and the same. Very, very larger than life men who are very, very small.
But driven to greatness. But I mean, that's the thing that drove all those guys to be the great talents they were at their job. So yeah, I hear what you're saying, but otherwise we wouldn't get the excellence that we always do when he steps up to the mic.
Now, it's a good point by you.
Now, yesterday, Don did a fantastic list. It was Mike Tyson's 54th birthday. And wow. Trey, you're in the same age window as Donald.
Factual statement.
Yes. As Donald M. LaGreca, and he often regales us with his moments of watching Tyson's early career with his dad. Do you have one standout Tyson fight moment from your teenage years?
The Mike Spinks fight was just ridiculous. Michael Spinks was a champion, a light heavyweight who stepped up to heavyweight and, you know, did great things. But I don't think I've ever seen someone more certain of that he was going to get knocked out than when he walked into that ring. It was ridiculous.
Did you have? Was there a big party at the Tre'Davious Wingo Estate?
No, I think I was working somewhere at that point. I was like, was that 88, John? Is that what that
88.
Was?
88. That's right. The summer of 88, and there was such a buildup, right? Because he kept showing up to Tyson's fights in the background, and it was just over in 90 seconds. He did not belong in the ring, and the hype was just tremendous. So I had it listed as number one, just because it's one of my memories, and history really remembers it. And I had Burbick at two because that made him the youngest heavyweight champion of all time.
Yep, I've never seen a guy's legs go out faster than the Burbick fight. I mean, it was just like, wow. It was wobble central faster than I've ever seen it.
It almost took the entire ring to try to get his bearings, and he never got him back.
Yeah, he was doing laps.
I just picture Trey and his family watching the Tyson Spinks fight, sitting in their paisley silk robes, smoking pipes, as they watch Mike Tyson destroy Mike Spinks' life. That's how I picture
Michael,
it.
Michael, what kind of snacks do you think they'd have at a Wingo party at that
probably,
time?
Probably, you know, like trail
a
mix.
Board. Come on.
Trail mix.
Charcuterie. I've heard it's some of the best charcuterie in Connecticut.
No, that's what I've heard.
I think fantastic, Rosie.
Cucumber sandwiches with the crust cut off.
Delightful.
If we're going full, let's go watercress and G&T's. How about that?
Mm. All right, so let's get to real deal here because we have not had you on since then. Everybody expected, everyone expected the Patriots to just go back. And I was covering the Yankees when Bernie Williams retired, and the Yankees just kept saying they were going to have Bubba Crosby as their center fielder. I didn't believe it. And then right before spring training, they signed Johnny Damon. So this is the Patriots' Johnny Damon. Do you think it works?
Listen, I don't know. I think it will. But to me, this is the most Bill Belichick move of all time. I mean, if you think about it, just for a variety of reasons. A, they get a former NFL MVP for next to nothing. B, they get him on a one-year incentive-laden contract, which is Bill's absolute maestro performance. Pennies on the dollar for someone. If he performs well, he'll get paid a lot of money and go somewhere else, which is what they do all the time. And most importantly, which I thought was really interesting, the news came out on the same day that they got penalized, a third-round draft pick, for the latest taping situation. Well, if Cam Newton leaves after 1 year and goes to be a free agent, guess what the Patriots get back in compensation? A third-round pick. It's just a maestro performance.
And I talked about this yesterday on the show. I wanted to open with the Cam Newton stuff, but it kind of just morphed into – just here we go again on a day where they get banged for a third controversy. All right, this is obviously jaywalking compared to the other two, but the fact that it came last, I think, has to be added to it. And yet all the praise gets thrown around to the brilliance of Bill Belichick. He gets himself Cam Newton. And again, we're distracted away like the old okey-doke that here is the great Bill Belichick that we're not talking about, yet another scandal around him. And I still think he's a great coach, but I don't want to say he gets away with it, because he kind of does, because really nothing ever really happens to him. But it doesn't end up becoming the focal point of the conversation ever.
Yeah, listen, there's a couple of things there. He did lose personally some money the first time around the Spygate.
$500,000.
Yeah, he's got it, but no one wants to lose $500,000.
I understand that, but of everything they lost, Trey, think about it for a second. Yep. Less than $3 million in fines to the organization for three things, all right? $500,000 for him, a fourth-round pick, a third-round pick, and his starting quarterback missing four games in which they went 3-1.
Hold on. I firmly believe Bill Belichick had nothing to do with whether or not Tom Brady was deflating those footballs. I'm sorry. You'll never convince me that was a Bill Belichick scheme. No way, no chance, no how.
Maybe it wasn't a scheme, but how can you say no way, no chance, no how, Trey?
Very simply. You can't find one NFL head coach anywhere that will go to their quarterback and say, hey, how do you like your PSI? They're not going to do it. It's not something that's under their purvey. It's not something they care about. All they care about is he happy? Is he getting what he wants? We're moving on. There's no way that you're ever going to convince me that Bill Belichick was the master behind the PSI of a football.
I don't think Sean Payton was the mastermind of Greg Williams having Bountygate. Yes, he got suspended for an entire year.
Because when things
happen on your watch, you're responsible.
Yeah, look, I guess. I mean, I think what we've learned about the deflation sensation, as I called it when it was all said and done, is that the NFL decided we can impose this penalty because the collective bargaining agreement says we can. There was a lot of question about what did and didn't happen in that one. And I'm not giving anybody a pass, but, it's clear to me that Tom Brady liked the balls deflated. I have no idea, or I feel pretty strongly that I do believe that there's no chance that Bill Belichick was saying, hey, do it at 11.5 PSI. I just don't believe that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's a story out in The Athletic, Trey, that the NFL intends to have fans in the stands in September. But you might have to sign a waiver.
Yeah.
Why would a fan do that?
Well, fan is short for fanatic. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Slim White, Mike, I just called you Mike. Sorry.
That's okay. Mike's
in my life. You remember when we were talking about opening day and you were reading emails of those guys talking about, I'm a 68-year-old guy with a heart problem or COPD or I have
asthma. That's true, yep.
And they were like, I'm going to be there opening day. So, it doesn't surprise me at all that someone would sign that waiver. People have such a love for their teams and their favorite players.
We had, Buster only said this across many of the network's outlets, where he said 5% chance that the season finishes in baseball, 0%.
Yeah.
No, 0% chance the season finishes, 5% that it even starts.
Right, exactly.
I don't believe that. I just, I love Buster and I respect him to the gills, but I believe that there is going to be a season. It would have to be something catastrophic to derail it. I just don't understand why it says 0 and 5.
Yeah, listen, all he's doing is reading the tea leaves from everybody he's talking to. And we had Jerry Harrison on with us this morning, who's, you know, won a World Series with the Yankees in 09, played 16 years, and is now doing some work for the Dodgers. And he was much more optimistic. I mean, through this whole process, Buster has been like, you know, Doggy Downer, and Jeff Passan has been our puppy upper baseball insider. So, you know, he's just sort of playing his cards, I guess. He's not making it up. You know, he's reading it off what people are telling him that he's talking to, so I'm not going to disassociate his opinion, but I'm with you. I'm a little more optimistic, but, you know, I would like people to have to stop closing their facilities because of outbreaks.
Well, I mean, there's a way that it could happen. I think it has to be catastrophic, and I really believe that the thing that would stop the season would be, God forbid, if somebody involved with a team dies. I think that
ICU and a ventilator. I think those things are also very much likely.
Right.
Not likely to happen, but they would trigger the worst case scenario.
And if baseball's smart, they do what the Twins did. They took two of their coaches that are in their late 60s, and they say, listen, you're not going to be a part of this. But there are some people that want no part of it. I mean, let's say in basketball, Popovich got very angry. He's coaching. Gentry's coaching. D'Antoni's coaching because they feel that it's ageism, that if you stop them from doing it. But again, if one of those guys gets really sick, then the league is going to have to close the sport down. They really will.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. To your point, I'm assuming the NBA along those lines is probably going to say, okay, if you want to do this, here's the waiver. You know what I mean?
No. Even if there's a waiver, Trey, if they get sick and God forbid die, the waiver doesn't mean anything. It means that they're not financially liable, but it's going to look awful.
No, you're right. Listen, Adam Silver said that in that Time 100 talk yesterday. He's like, the question someone posed to him was, you know, are you full steam ahead no matter what? And he's like, of course we're not full steam ahead no matter what. I mean, we're going to try this thing and we hope it works. You know, someone made the analogy to us. It's not really a bubble. It's more like a mesh hat. Like, you're covered, but there are a lot of ways people can sort of worm in and out of this thing if they really wanted to. So I think that might be the most apt analogy of what we're really looking at here.
But doesn't this kind of feel like, guys, the netting along the baselines? Because the percentages told you that nobody gets killed from a foul ball. But you know the second somebody does, they're going to put the netting up. And we always talk, well, why don't you put the netting up before somebody dies? So it doesn't have that same feeling that if you're going to shut it down because somebody might contract the virus, a coach, a trainer, end up on a ventilator, possibly die, when that person does die, won't we be having the conversation, how the heck did you do this anyway? This could have been prevented. Aren't you taking a chance?
Yes. Look, Andrew Brand, who used to work for us and you know, was a former president of the Packers, put out a tweet along these lines basically when it comes to football, and I think it applies to every sport, whether it's basketball or baseball. If we were 100% committed and only concerned about player safety, we wouldn't be playing anything. But we all know that's not the only thing we're concerned with. I mean, there's just to host the NBA bubble in Orlando for the next 3 months, I think it's costing the NBA $150 million. And obviously they're planning on getting a lot of that money back through television revenue and ad sales through the playoffs. So if it was just about player safety, none of this would be going on. But we all know there's an economic impact to it, and everyone has to decide, from the athlete to the administrator in the league to the fan who's consuming it, where is that line for you that's saying the risk is worth it for us to consume this?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that Silver said, and we spoke about this earlier in the show, that we're doing this for the good of our country. No, you're not. You're doing it for money, which is not, there's no crime in that. But I think the offshoot of coming back for money is that the country will like it. But I don't think that if anybody was doing it for the good of the country, why did baseball go through what it went through fighting the owners and the players? I think this is a financial situation. These are big businesses. There are a lot of people that are employed, not just in those specific businesses, but in surrounding businesses and broadcasting, whatever. So I think that the whole thing is about money, and they have to weigh the risk. And I think the risk right now, they don't think is great enough to give away the money.
I 100% agree with you. Remember, it was one positive test in the NBA, Rudy Gobert, that shut down every sport.
Who, by the way, still can't smell and taste, by the way.
Yeah, well, he has taste. He can't smell all the way back. He doesn't have his smell all the way back. And quite frankly, if he's going to a locker room, that could be a good thing. So the point being, look how our perspective has changed. You know, it was one positive test that shut everything down, and now there are multiple positive tests across every single sport, and we're trying to figure out a way to get it done. And you're right. There's a money impact. Now, I do believe there's some good things that will happen to sports coming back, and it will make us feel better. But you're right. For being honest about it, that's the ancillary byproduct of making sure the machine rolls on.
I mentioned this to Peter yesterday. I'll ask you because you're a big golf fan. Scores have been way down. Is that because they're playing the courses to be quicker, so there's lower scores, so there's interest on television? Or is the lack of a gallery taking the pressure away? And is this something that we can kind of bleed into the other sports where we might actually see relaxed players who can actually perform better without crowds?
You know, that's a great point, Don, because we had Ricky Fowler on this morning with us, and he said, you know, we miss the energy that the fans provide, which is another way of saying, you know, they fire us up a little bit, and they put a little more on the line. Now, I will say that the Travelers, which was just here in Connecticut last week, is a lot of times one of the easier courses out there. But to your point, if you go back to the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial and the RBC Heritage, it was ridiculous under par. I mean, 12 under par, I think, at the RBC got you like a tie for 17th place. It is. I think there really is something to that because they add a little element. And, you know, you talk about the Ryder Cup, which is one of my favorite sporting events, and both sides talk about how much pressure and energy the home crowd gives to them and how much pressure puts on the visiting crowd. So I think there is something to that could easily translate to all
now,
sports.
Trey, I am of the mindset that, you know, most sports, I'm all good with them powering through if there's a way to do it safely. Right. I don't think the Ryder Cup makes sense without fans. Where do you land on that?
It's my favorite sporting event, so obviously I want to see it, and I totally hear you. Like, that great match a few years ago, 2016, at Hazeltine between Patrick Reed, who everybody hates until he's kicking ass for the Americans,
yep,
against Rory McIlroy. That was a WWE match. That's what that was. It was incredible. And you're right. The crowd fed off that. It was remarkable. So you're right. It won't be the same in any way, shape, or form. That being said, it's still the only sporting event I know where multimillionaires literally play for nothing. And
now,
I enjoy that part of it.
Last thing about golf, do you believe that Ian Poulter is now the king of flatulence on the golf on the tour?
Oh my goodness! Who would be second?
I can promise you this: I've never spent a second of my life doing the list of the best farters on the PGA Tour.
RJ, do you have the audio there?
Oh my goodness!
Oh, that's poor guy. I'm not going to lie to you. That was a good out. No, I'm not going to lie to you, but I think I'd have to put him at number one. Now, I think I've read stories where Tiger at times has decided to let one rip just to make people laugh, so maybe I'd put him at two.
Okay.
But unintended consequences, I would go with Poulter number one, sure.
Okay. Glad we got that. Personal question here. When you're touring the many golf courses you belong to, does that ever happen?
Hey, you got to relax any way you can out here. Tension is the enemy of the swing.
Out here. So he's probably in between holes right now, Peter. He's playing golf right now again.
Oh, he definitely is.
Just so you guys know, I've been playing a hole the entire time I've been talking to you and putting the phone on speaker and making my swings in between the cases.
I wish that was true.
Answer a question during swing.
I believe it's true.
It is true.
All right, Trey, we'll let you get back to your game. I hope you shoot a 59.
So do I, but then I would probably quit for life, and I don't want that to be the case. You boys are the best.
Take care,
Trey. You know what? Some might. Anyway, be well. Yeah. We love you.
All right, buddy. You too. We'll see you.